The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger as we bring you the 2009 NFL and college football season in style. We've got you covered with game insight, opinion, and football expertise. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter.
There is no bigger honor than to go into the professional Hall of Fame or college Hall of Fame.
Each week, the Big E Sports Show will take you under the helmet to bring you the latest talk on the 2009 season of college and pro football.
Is there maximum effort out there? Because that's one thing you don't have to be talented at. You don't need talent to try hard. And that's the thing that I'm looking for out of them this year.
Under the Helmet with Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, I want to welcome you back this weekend to another edition of the Big E Sports Show. The discussion continues with Mike Leach versus Texas Tech after a judge ruled in favor of the former Red Raiders head coach and that Leach's lawsuit can go forward. So the soap opera continues, and what better person to help provide perspective than our very own college expert, that is Jason Peter. We also are going to be talking some AFC Championship, NFC Championship this weekend too. I would probably venture to guess it's Jason Peter's one of his favorite times of the year. Jason, how are you?
I'm good, and you are correct. It is one of my favorite weekends of the year. There's something about championship weekend that, I'm a college football guy at heart, but this is the one weekend, even more so, I think, for me at least, than the Super Bowl, as far as the NFL season goes. This is the one weekend where I do not miss a snap, and like I said to you earlier, there's something, though, that's going to be a little strange, I think, this weekend, because both games are going to be played in domes. And the one thing I think that's enjoyable for people to watch when you're talking about these championship games, or, you know, whether it's played in New England or a game out in Denver, and these are two teams, obviously, that have been in it for many, many years, there's something about football being played in the cold. And, you know, it used to be on natural grass for the most part. All the stadiums in the NFL were natural grass, and seeing the snow kind of piled up against the walls of the stadium, there's something about that just, I don't know, it makes my blood flow, and I just love it. And this weekend, obviously, with the teams that are playing, it's all going to be done inside. It's a little strange.
Jets at the Colts, and that's at 2 o'clock on Sunday, and the Vikings at the Saints. And, of course, for the Dallas Cowboy fans, very disappointed that their team did not prevail, and, of course, the Vikings did. But momentarily here, let's just step back. You played for the Carolina Panthers. How different was it for you when you arrived on the NFL scene to play in a dome? I mean, what is it like, Jason?
Well, I was able to play a few games in my collegiate career in the dome. We played the Big 12 championship game, as well as, both years, 1996 and 1997, one in St. Louis and the other one in San Antonio. And it's a little strange. Everything kind of echoes. You're trying to listen to the linebacker who's in the huddle calling the play, and the PA announcer is on, whether he's talking about the previous play. But there's a lot of distraction, and it's just even more of a reason, I think, for these players. They have to be just completely focused. And when you're in that huddle and you're listening to that linebacker give his call, you almost have to watch his lips as well and see the words come out of his mouth. But the one thing that can happen in a dome is it can get loud. I mean, really, really loud. Fortunately, I played for Nebraska in college, and we always traveled well, so we never were really outmatched in terms of attendance with our fans. But at the NFL level, we went to some places like St. Louis. They were in our conference at the time, and that was when Mike Martz was running the show and Dick Vermeil, and it was the Fun and Gun, the greatest show on turf type deal with Kurt Warner, and that place got loud as could be. And when you have a team that's having success out there on that field and they're in a dome, it's the worst thing that you could ask for, because when your offense is out there and you're the road team, it's hard to hear. I mean, it's hard to hear what the guy next to you is saying, let alone if you're an offensive tackle and you're trying to listen to the quarterback, and you're going on a snap count of three or something, it's hard to hear. That's why you'll see a lot of times when domes get loud, you'll see some of those offensive linemen, they grab hands, and they just kind of, it's like a chain, a reaction when the ball snapped, and the center, his hand is connected to the guard, and when the guard feels that, and everybody just kind of goes, because you'll have offensive linemen just jumping off sides left and right in some of these places.
We're talking to a guy, indeed, he knows a thing or two about success. Of course, a three-time national champion at the University of Nebraska, as Jason Peter had just said. Usually during our Under the Helmet segment, we are zeroing in and talking about college football, and we will do that here momentarily. But just a beautiful segue there by Jason Peter, taking us right into talking some AFC championship and, of course, NFC championship. My question to you, Jason, is how big of a surprise to see the Jets at the Colts and perhaps even the Vikings with the Saints?
It is a surprise with the Jets, but it's also not a surprise, because when you talk about the New York Jets and the struggles, sure, Mark Sanchez, I mean, he came out like a ball of fire. I mean, the first three or four games of the year, everybody was thinking, wow, this guy, he's going to be a Pro Bowler this year, and then kind of everything settled in, and he started to struggle. But I think with the Jets, the thing that's great about them is, number one, they're one of the most confident teams in the NFL. Number two, they have the best rushing attack in the NFL. I mean, they play great defense, and they run the ball well. Now, that's kind of that's the recipe, I think, for success at any level. I mean, it kind of reminds me of the old New York Giant teams as a kid growing up in Jersey and Bill Parcells coaching. That was his philosophy. It was, we're going to run the ball, we're going to be physical as can be, and we're going to play great defense. And they ended up winning Super Bowls. And you look at college football this year, and you know, so much is about the spread offense and being able to throw it all over the place. Well, this year's national champion, Alabama, what do? They pound the ball, they're physical up front, and they play great defense. Even when you look at the national championship game last year in Florida and Urban Meyer, yeah, they do run a spread offense. But when you, I think, looked at both Florida and Oklahoma from the 2008 championship game, Oklahoma, certainly the team that was, I would say, more dynamic with throwing the ball all over the place. Florida, even though they were running the spread with Tim Tebow, it was a physical style of spread, and he was a guy that was going to rush the ball 10, 15, 20 times a game, and they were going to pick up yardage that way. So much more of a physical dominating team and playing great defense. And I think that's what you get with the New York Jets, is you're not going to get Sanchez throwing the ball 35 or 40 times a game, because that will just lead to disaster. You're going to get a bunch of confident guys out there who Rex Ryan lets them be whoever they want to be, and that's a great thing. And you're going to see a lot of guys that want to go play for this man. But they get it done with playing great defense and physical offensive style of football with running the ball.
Well, you mentioned Jets coach Rex Ryan, and just what an incredible, I mean, they have won five of their last six games, and they've had plenty of help. Of course, you had mentioned Mark Sanchez. All I can say is, it is a good thing, Jason Peter, that Mark Sanchez did not listen to his college coach, that he needed to stay in college another year.
Yeah, I know.
What was Pete Carroll thinking?
They both would be leaving, I guess, at the same time now this year.
True.
But, yeah, I mean, to think back to that day when he announced, and Pete Carroll coming out saying he's making a big mistake, and then a week or so later, Pete Carroll coming out and saying, oh, I was just testing him. I just wanted to make sure he was really in it. And, you know, whatever. I mean, it's all coach speak. At that point, is there really a reason to come out and say that I was just checking? Because once he declares for the draft, there's no taking his name back out. I don't believe it's like basketball, where if you don't sign with an agent, then you're able to withdraw your name. He was in, and you know, the circus certainly continued around USC even at that point.
So when we line it up, who do you think as far as who will prevail between the Jets and the Colts? I mean, obviously the Jets 9-7, the Colts 14-2, and the man, of course, is always Peyton Manning. What do you think?
Normally, I would not bet against Peyton Manning, and I'm not saying I am betting against Peyton Manning, but something that you mentioned when you were talking about the Jets and winning five out of last six, momentum. And momentum might be the biggest factor, I think, in all of sports. And there's nothing like a team that's coming off of wins, a team that's confident, a team that thinks that they could beat anybody. There was a similar team that did this, I think it was in 2000. It was the Baltimore Ravens.
And that's right.
And I'm not sure, I don't think Rex Ryan was a, he may have been a member. He wasn't the coordinator. I think Mike Nolan was coordinator. Or maybe, no, the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals. Marvin Lewis was the defense coordinator for that team. But they were a wild card team that just got into the playoffs with, I think, 9-7. And they went and rolled through everybody and won a Super Bowl. And it's a very similar style of football team where they play great defense and they can run the ball. And that team, I was at that game actually because they played my brother's New York Giants. And as a, like I said, an old time Giant fan and having a brother play, it was tough sitting up in that stands down in Tampa watching Baltimore do it. But this is very reminiscent, I think, of that year with what the Jets are doing this year. So I would not count out the New York Jets. If they come and they can play with their A game and they play well on defense and they can get that running game going, I would not be shocked. But if you're asking me to pick a winner, I am going to go with Indianapolis. I just think there's too much that Peyton Manning knows. You can't fool him. I mean, you get up to the line of scrimmage, you can try to disguise every defense that you run. There's just something. He is probably one, if not the most intelligent player, I think, that's ever played the game in terms of he's constantly studying and learning. He constantly, I mean, there's nothing, like I said, that you can trick him with. He's just, he's a guy that can eventually, when his career is done, he can go from being a player to being either an offensive coordinator or a head coach. I mean, he's just that smart when it comes to the game of football.
Jason Peter bringing his A-game this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. We want to pause and direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. Also, we want to recognize our premier corporate sponsor, our good friends and folks at Western Company of Texas, always doing a great job. And here we were talking about the Colts and their terrific quarterback in Peyton Manning, what he's been able to do and accomplish with his team, 14-2. JP, did you play against him when you were in the NFL?
Yeah, there was our rookie year, and both of us actually were starters our rookie year. I had actually gone on injured reserve by the end of my rookie year, I think, for the last two games, and we played Indianapolis one of those games. So I did not get to play against Peyton out there on the field, but our teams did play one another. But the last time I had played against him was in the 1998 Orange Bowl when we played Tennessee and annihilated them. And it's good, I think, that that was the last time that I played against him because those are my memories, that I was actually a part of a team that dominated Peyton Manning and the football team that he led, because that does not happen often anymore.
Hey, you know, with all the headlines with Tiger Woods, and here we thought he was this one guy, and he's not. I mean, what's the kind of the rumor as far as Peyton Manning? He seems to be, you know, a good, wholesome guy. He comes from, you know, a terrific family. What kind of was the talk in the NFL? Can you share anything?
He was a great guy. He's the type of guy that you want your sister to marry. A short little story to tell you what type of guy, and it's not just kind of all window dressing with him. He's the real deal. When our senior year had come to an end, we were both up for all the major awards, him on offense and myself for the defensive awards. And there were different things, parties and banquets, the ESPN awards, stuff like that. And so we traveled to, I believe it was Orlando. And you get a bunch of 22, 23-year-old players together and away from college for a while, and you kind of have a free pass to go out. And there was a few of us players that were from different schools that ended up going out one night. And let's say we probably got ourselves into a situation that we shouldn't have. You know, we were out real late. We ended up at a bar that we shouldn't have been at. And there was a point where about three or four of us were a few seconds away from getting held up at gunpoint, and on this back alley road where somebody said it was going to be a good idea to go with somebody from this bar who was going to take us to another bar. And sure enough, coming down the road is a Jeep, and this Jeep pulls up right in front of our car, and they get out, and two people are walking towards us, and it's a security officer and Peyton Manning. And
wow.
Peyton Manning comes out, and he says, "Let's go. All three of you knuckleheads, get in the car right now." And it was like our father was talking to us, and we were all like, "Okay, Peyton, you know, we did wrong. Just don't yell at us too much." And we got in the car, and we went home. And, you know, it was Peyton who had the common sense to not go and get in a car with a complete stranger and go to some party that, you know, some guy's promising you the best time of your life. Peyton was the one who kept it all together, and you know, fortunately, he was a guy that I'm honored to know. And just in the brief time that I've got to spend with him, he'll be somebody that, you know, I tell my kids about because he's one of the best that will ever play the game.
It's interesting because, of course, I've read your book. We've talked about your book, Hero of the Underground. You can go to jasonpeter.com and get a copy of that. Jason, I don't remember that story being told in the book. Was it in there?
I'm not sure if I went into detail with that. I have to read my book over again. It's kind of been a while, but now I talk a little bit about Peyton and kind of the build up to the Orange Bowl and talking with him kind of at some of these award banquets that we attended together. But no, I left that one out just because maybe, you know, Peyton wouldn't have appreciated being in my book in that context. So, not that it's horrible. He actually did a great thing, but decided against that one.
Talking about Peyton Manning, well, let's talk about his coach. And in fact, they had a wonderful article in the Star-Telegram talking about that, proving continuity doesn't really matter. Jets coach Rex Ryan and Colts coach Jim Caldwell are rookie head coaches. And here they are, just one win away from the Super Bowl. And just, you know, anything can happen, even if you are a rookie coach.
Yeah, and you think about before the season started with Jim Caldwell, and it was even Peyton Manning that came out and said he didn't really appreciate or he didn't agree with maybe some of the things that were going on, that maybe they were trying to change, I guess, the franchise of Indianapolis. You know, there was a mess with Tom Moore, the longtime assistant, where he was kind of forced to step down. And I know that had more to do with kind of the NFL and I think some insurance or I don't know. It was a complete mess, whatever it was. But, you know, there was just a lot of things that were, I guess, different from the Indianapolis Colts that Tony Dungy was running. And, you know, who would have thought that this would have been a team that goes 15-0 and has an opportunity to make history in the NFL, and you know, they end up losing that last game. But what a year for, like you said, both of them, not just Jim Caldwell, but for Rex Ryan. Certainly, I think the year has probably been a little bit smoother for Jim Caldwell, but Rex Ryan has done a tremendous job. And the truth is, it doesn't matter if you finished the regular season at 9-7 or if you finished it at 15-1. If you're both in the playoffs and the 9-7 team wins a championship, I'd rather have that year than the one that went 15-1.
We hit on the AFC championship. Let's talk about the NFC championship, the Vikings at the Saints, and certainly a lot of grieving Cowboy fans. Just your thought on that. Did you think that there would be, I don't know, that the Vikings would just run away with that win last weekend like they did?
No, if you would have asked me who was going to win this game after the first two series, I would have said the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, they had been playing really well on defense. They were moving the ball on offense, and something just, I don't know what happened exactly, but Minnesota kind of found their rhythm, and Dallas kind of lost theirs. And I don't know if it's the veteran quarterback with Minnesota, with Brett Favre, and you know, there's a reason why the guy's been in the league for as long as he has. He's successful, and he can lead teams to victories. And Tony Romo is one of the more talented guys in the NFL. But there's still, I think, that question mark when it comes to winning in the postseason. And he got one this year with the third victory over the Philadelphia Eagles. But it just kind of stopped there. And I think he'll have success eventually down the road. And I'm sure everybody in the state of Texas is hoping it's sooner rather than later. But Minnesota, I mean, this is what they brought Brett Favre in to do, to win football games, to make all the players around him better. And that's, I think, what you've seen out of this Minnesota team for most of the year. I mean, it's not just one or two receivers that he throws it to. He's got five or six. I mean, there have been some problems. It's funny because you bring a guy in like Brett Favre and you have a guy like Adrian Peterson and you think that it will just kind of, you know, everything that AP has done, he'll continue to do, and you get Brett Favre on top of it. But Adrian Peterson's been the one who's kind of had some fumbling issues this year and doing some things that maybe aren't necessarily characteristic of the way that he's played in the years that he's been in the NFL. But, you know, they're a heck of a football team, and you know, I think when it's all said and done, I would not be completely shocked if Brett Favre has another Super Bowl ring on his finger.
Jason Peter along with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And, of course, Jason, as memory serves me right, you played for George Seifert with the Carolina Panthers. Let me ask you, could you play for a guy like Wade Phillips as far as his demeanor?
It's not really the demeanor that I like in a coach. It's too much to borrow a term from Alex Rodriguez, too loosey-goosey for me. it seems kind of like the inmates run the asylum. You know, I kind of like the coach that's in charge and says this is what needs to be done. And maybe on the inside, that is what he's doing. But, you know, from what we can tell on the outside, he's not like that. He's kind of the anti-Bill Parcells. And, you know, does that matter when you get to a point where you're in the playoffs and you're trying to make it to a Super Bowl? I think so. I think there's got to be a coach there that's demanding, and certainly a lot of it has to come from the players, especially when you're in the NFL. I mean, in college, you know, it's a little different. I think, you know, the kids, they need that structure. They need the discipline. They need the coach to tell them to go run through wall after wall after wall. When you're in the NFL and you're making millions of dollars, sure, to have that type of coach, I think it's an added it's a bonus, but I think it also falls on the shoulders of those players to make sure that we've got a job to do, we need to go out and do it, whether or not our coach is a motivator or not. You know, he's a tremendous defensive coordinator, and I think you've seen what he's capable of doing since he took over the play-calling duties for that defense. And I think that's one of the reasons why Jerry Jones has decided to keep him around, because he is, I think, one of the top coordinators in the NFL when you're talking about defense. So, you know, whether or not Jason Garrett is going to be the next guy, I think, you know, for the most part, Wade Phillips is still on a yearly contract, so to speak. I think at any time, old Jerry can say, we've kind of had enough. We're going to move on in a different direction. So, he should be happy for now. He still has a job. A lot of people thought that if they didn't make the Super Bowl, that he would not return as the head football coach for the Dallas Cowboys. So he's kind of, I think, proven everybody wrong in that regard.
Well, there certainly was a lot of speculation, but as you said, his contract is renewed, and he will be sticking around Dallas a little bit longer. I did want to get your take as far as a little bit of war of words with the linebacker from Dallas, Keith Birking. He was talking about that the Vikings were classless when the Vikings threw that touchdown pass with fourth down with, 1:55 left in the game. I don't know. What's your thoughts and perspective on that? I mean, this is the game of football. This isn't flag football. Was that pretty classless, or what did you think?
Yeah, I'm shocked that a veteran like Keith Brooking would come out and say something like that. I mean, this is a guy that's been in the league. He was in my draft class. I mean, he was a guy that was at all those award banquets that I was talking about. I mean, a top-notch player coming out of Georgia Tech. And to come out and say something like that, I mean, If you're in college, I can understand the kid coming out and saying something like that where, hey, we were embarrassed. But even at that level, I doubt, or, you know, I just can't foresee a player coming out and complaining about the other team putting more points up on us. But when you're talking about the NFL, I mean, these are guys, like I said, getting paid millions of dollars. It's your job to stop them. I mean, Minnesota, they can do whatever they want to do. I mean, they're working on a Super Bowl here. They're not going to take off 3 minutes or 5 minutes or change what they're doing. They want to make sure that they're a fine-tuned machine when they're ready to play the following weekend. So for them to kind of call off the dogs, I think it's ridiculous. But what's even more ridiculous is the fact that Keith Brookin would complain about it.
Okay, another quick question as we are quickly running out of time. Just your thoughts on Brett Favre. I know that it was kind of a little bit of a roller coaster ride for him in the month of December. You know, everybody was started to be very critical of him once again. But come on now, he is 40 years old, and he is one win away from taking the Vikings to the Super Bowl. It is a remarkable run for him.
Yeah, I think the bigger question, though, Liff, is if they win the Super Bowl, is Brett Favre coming back for another year next year? And that, I'm sure he'll save that for next August to let the drama build up a little bit more before deciding. But, to think back just a few months ago when is he or isn't he going to be coming back to play and the whole mess. I mean, even going back to when he left Green Bay and being in New York last year, you have been able to tell a difference with Brett Favre, though, from this year and last year. I mean, with the New York Jets, it was just kind of like he was going through the motions. There wasn't that young kid out there playing the game anymore. And with Minnesota, you've kind of gotten that old Brett Favre back. You can't argue with what he's been able to do. And like I said earlier in the show, I mean, guys don't play in the league for 20 years if they're not doing something right. And he's doing it right. Whether or not they can get past New Orleans, I think that's a whole nother question. Offensively, I think they'll probably score some points, but I think you're going to see some problems maybe on the defensive side. They have some injuries up front on that defensive line with one of the Williams brothers and that Ray Edwards, who had a tremendous game against Dallas, and he's kind of dinged up too a little bit. So if those two guys aren't up to speed, aren't 100%, not at 100%, most guys aren't 100%, but if they're not running at least 80%, it's going to be difficult, I think, for Minnesota to win this game.
Right, and we will see how it all plays out. Of course, the Vikings at the Saints on Sunday. My final question for you is, let's quickly talk about some Texas Tech. Leach's lawsuit against Texas Tech is going forward, and I thought it was remarkable that he had come out, or his agent had said that they had unsuccessfully tried to set up interviews at Southern Cal, Tennessee, East Carolina, and even at South Florida. I mean, is this guy going to have a difficult time getting a job?
I think so, and I think it's these allegations on top of Mike Leach's personality. I mean, you're not dealing with a guy here who's like most of the other coaches in college football. I mean, he's got a quirky personality. He says things that sometimes it leaves your jaw hitting the floor. But the thing you get with Mike Leach is you get results. And, can he coach football? Yeah, he can. Whether or not he's going to be a head coach this year, probably not. I think he'll probably have to maybe take a coordinator position. I do believe that he should be able to get that. But there's no reason why Mike Leach should not be able to get the head job at East Carolina or even out of South Florida. I mean, and to think what he could do with the talent that South Florida gets. I mean, you think they scored points at Texas Tech. Man, South Florida, the athletes that they have there, I mean, it's a whole other world. So this certainly, I think, has hurt. And you can understand why he's filed these charges and saying that there's slander here and his name is ruined. Because when you look at college football and you look at some of the coaches that are out there and some of the coaches that have kept their jobs, and then you look at a guy like Mike Leach, who has a proven track record, has won games, and he can't get a head job at a school like East Carolina. I mean, heck, what's his name out? Who was at Iowa State, and now Gene Chizik, who's at Auburn, he got a head job after going 2-10 at Iowa State. I mean, and he got a raise, and he got promoted pretty much to the SEC, and one of the schools with the greatest tradition in college football. And Mike Leach, all he's done is won more than any other coach in the Big 12, I think, that where he's had more maybe consecutive bowl appearances since the Big 12 has formed than any other coach. And, you know, now he's finding himself out of work. So it's an unfortunate deal because basically it's a he said, she said type deal. But now the fact that you know, he can't get another head job, I would say it's sad, because even for the people that don't like Mike Leach, he's great for what we do. I mean, to listen to this guy talk and to hear some of the things that come out of his mouth, it certainly makes for great talk radio.
Absolutely. And of course, you had mentioned Auburn. Tommy Tuberville will be replacing Mike Leach at Texas Tech. We'll keep our eyes on that. And he says that he is recharged after sitting out of college football for a year. And at 55 years old, he is ready to take on the challenge. Well, listen, Jason Peter, great job today. Never a shortage on words for you. Like I've always said, you probably talk in your sleep. So thank you so much for dropping by. And we will catch up with you next week as we prepare for the Super Bowl.
Well, you bring the best out of me, Alyssa, so thank you. I love coming on the show.
Outstanding. Thank you, Jason. And stick around. We've got Joe Capp coming up here in just a minute.